This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. So when you're in your basement, do you ever think you see a shadow right over there? You think you feel like somebody's watching you? Author Jeffrey Deaver will make sure you do. His book plays on ordinary fears like darkness and loss of control. His latest novel is The Skin Collector, and its villain's choice of weapon is needles. The killer tattoos cryptic messages on his victims using ink laced with poison. And it all happens in the dark depths of underground tunnels burrowing in a large metropolitan area. Author Jeffrey Deaver joins us now. Welcome back, Jeff.
Oh, good to see you again, Frank.
You have done it again. You've made one of these marvelous creepy thrillers. Tell us about the Skin Collector.
Sure. Well, I was being interviewed some years ago, and the anchor person said they got a bit testy, actually. And they said, Mr. Deaver, what do you say to the charges that you are manipulative in your writing? And I said, thank you. it's a compliment. And I mean that. My job is to create a roller coaster that grabs the readers by the lapels on the opening page and then drags them through the book over the course of – books are generally pretty short, 2 or 3 days, and then deposits them safe and sound at the end. And that's the way I construct all of my books. But I do something else. Because I've written about 35 novels now, the Lincoln Rhyme series, which began with The Bone Collector, I left open some plot twists at the end of that book that I knew were going to come back eventually. So what I did – I teased the readers once or twice in the course of the 10 books in the intervening years, but I decided it's finally time to set those plot points to rest, and that's the Skin Collector. So the Skin Collector is this evil, nefarious villain I described who is, in a way, a copycat, who has made his present crimes reflective of the Bone Collector, but he focuses on skin rather than bone.
Intentionally so. This is somebody who knew about the Bone Collector. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll need to tell us a little bit about those crimes and why the Skin Collector would then admire this murderer so much and try to carry on the legacy.
Sure. Well, you really hit on something just a moment ago, Frank, because I have written from time to time about terrorists and about geopolitical threats, actually about environmental threats, about data mining, but the kind of fears that I really want to prey upon, and I say that with some pride, is the personal fears. In the Bone Collector, for instance, the villain there would isolate individuals in fairly vulnerable situations. For instance, they'd get into a taxi cab. And the cab would turn to the left, and they think, well, you know, I haven't been to New York City, but I think we should be going to the right. And as the cab went along and the neighborhoods became more and more deserted, they said, I've got to get out of here. And then they'd realize there were no latches, no door handles, and so they were, in effect, trapped. And people in New York City government told me that I was kind of joking, but true as well, that I was personally responsible for a significant diminution in public transportation. So if any taxi cab drivers are listening to this, please don't hold it against me.
The left turn just meant they had an iPhone for their GPS. But now you're explaining this fear, which is this loss of control. We get into a car with a stranger and the door closes, and that's a hard thing for a human to do.
Exactly. And the villain in the Skin Collector, now this is some years later, his name is Billy Haven. There are other twists, believe me, lots of other twists in the book, but his identity is not a mystery. He had read some books and journalistic articles about the Bone Collector, and for reasons that I don't want to give away that are revealed in the last few pages of the book, that resonated with him. And he said, well, but bones, they're inartful. There's nothing subtle about bones. Skin is what really makes us unique. And so he, being a very talented tattoo artist, an ink artist, quote, collects the skin. Now, your listeners may think he actually cuts skin or literally collects it. No, he's really an art collector. He owns the skin by putting his unique messages on it in a very, very talented hand. I myself am not inked. I didn't know much about the world before I started researching the book, but apparently most tattoo artists use preformed decals, or they do an outline with a pen or something like that. But the really great ones don't. They can do freehand. They're sort of the Rembrandts of skin art. And that's who Billy is, the difference being that he simply uses poisons instead of ink.
Well, and the inspiration, you're living in Chapel Hill now, and I understand the inspiration for this latest novel came to you while having dinner in Chapel Hill.
I was indeed going to this isn't a plug. It's just a fact. I was at a place called Sal's Restaurant in Chapel Hill, and a waitress there who's also a friend had a very interesting tattoo, and I said, "Oh, that's interesting." And I got the idea that what if the design that was on her arm, presumably she selected it from a number of them. What if somebody wanted to send a message and give a portion of that message, or spread over a course of four or five or six victims? And I thought, well, that's a great idea. So skin collector, bone collector, that will work. Doesn't seem scary enough. Ah. Poisons. He uses poisons instead of ink. And that was the true moment of inspiration.
I hate to break this to you, Jeffrey, but saying that the inspiration for your books, anybody who's ever read your wonderful books, came from a particular restaurant is not a plug.
That's a problem.
That's a problem, isn't it? So sorry to you folks at Sales. When we need to find out about this detective who you've created, who has appeared in many, many books, although this you consider, even 10 books later, really the sequel. Talk about Lincoln Rhyme.
Sure. For the listeners who may not be familiar with the book, Lincoln Rhyme is a quadriplegic, paralyzed from the neck down. He was really head of the New York City Forensic Investigation Unit that your listeners know from CSI and shows like that. And he was injured on a crime scene and was about to give up. Actually, he was looking into assisted suicide because he didn't want to live. But then the case of the bone collector arose, and he got back on the horse, so to speak. Now, where did he come from? I was casting around for a book idea. This goes back about 15 years, and I get very concerned. I get very nervous that I'm going to write a book that my fans are bored with, that they don't like, that's a cliche. So what I try to do is adhere to this comment I've heard about Hollywood, which is a bit of a joke, but there's some truth to it, that a producer looking for a new project to turn into a film wants something that's completely original, never been done before, and yet has been wildly successful in the past. But there is some truth to that.
Yeah, sure.
And so what I do when I come up with a book idea is make sure my readers get a typical Jeffrey Deaver novel, which means it moves over the course of 2 days very quickly, internal reverses, three or four big surprise endings. Well, okay, that's the structure of the book, but what do I write about? And I decided, here's an idea. A Sherlock Holmes for the present day, someone who does not carry a gun, who cannot carry a gun, who does not do karate kicking, doesn't walk into a bar and exchange those, rather tedious bon mots with the clientele. He has to sit in his bed and outthink the villain in a way like Sherlock Holmes, although he did get out to the field occasionally. And I thought I'd try it. I'll make him a quadriplegic. He cannot physically get into the field and see what happens. And the book has become, the first of a very quite odd to say a very popular series.
Very popular series. And while he can't get up and around, his partner, Amelia Sachs, does. And she's a bit of an alter ego. So tell us about her.
She is. Amelia, played by Angelina Jolie in the film version of the Bone Collector, who really brought the character that character to life, because Lincoln is very mental. He's very intelligence oriented. Amelia is very smart too, but she's an action person. Now these are murder mysteries. These are thrillers. So you got to have somebody with that Glock 17 on her hip. She drives a muscle car. Now it's a Torino. She was driving a Camaro for a while. And, you need your palms to sweat both intellectually when Lincoln is struggling to figure out what the bad guy is going to do next. But you also need to know that when somebody's driving up Fifth Avenue at 75 miles an hour, weaving in and out of traffic, exchanging gunfire with the bad guys, that there's going to be that kind of excitement as well.
Will you read for us?
I would love to. And what I'd like to do, lest your listeners think that this is all gloom and doom, I do like to introduce a little bit of humor into the book. And so one aspect of Lincoln Rhyme is that he is a bit of a school marm. And this is a scene between Lincoln and a fellow he calls the rookie, a young Ron Pulaski, a young officer on his team. And so they are now looking for a type of tattoo gun that may lead back to the villain. Lincoln Rhimes said, "So the perp's tattoo gun would be battery-operated. Hey, rookie, find out who makes battery tattoo guns." Ron Pulaski went back online saying, "Well, hopefully they'll be pretty rare." Rhimes said, "Well, now that's going to be interesting." "What's that, Lincoln?" "Finding a tattoo gun that's filled with hope." "That's filled with what?" Rhyme continued, "Well, that's what hopefully means, you know. Your sentence didn't say, 'I hope that portable tattoo guns are rare.' Using hopefully as a disjunct, an opinion by the speaker, is non-standard. English teachers would disapprove." The young officer's head bobbed. "Lincoln, I sometimes think I've walked into a Quentin Tarantino movie when I'm talking to you." Rhyme's eyebrows arched. "Continue." Pulaski grumbled, "You know that scene where two hitmen are going to blow somebody away, but then they talk and talk and talk about how eager and anxious aren't the same thing, or how disinterested doesn't mean uninterested. You just want to slap him." "Well, those two misuses bother me just as much," Lincoln muttered. "Let's get back to work." And he turned to the collection bag, thinking he'd have to find out who this Tarantino was.
Jeffrey Deaver, reading from his latest novel, The Skin Collector. I deeply appreciate Lincoln's marmish disapproval of abusive language that way.
Oh, isn't it the case?
It's great.
Sort of a trademark of my books. In Alfred Hitchcock's film, you remember, all of his films, he had a cameo where he walked across camera. That's one of the running jokes of all of my Lincoln Rhyme books, that he has to get in a little dig about the propriety of the English language. We have to be a stalwart against that in these days of texts.
But that's one of the ways of creating this thing that is entirely new and yet entirely familiar. There are characteristics, quirks that we look for, the sort of Columbo, just one more thing, looking for the pencil, some characteristic that will recur that gives us comfort and that we find, sort of lovable.
Interesting you mention that, Frank, because I am known for my plots. I spend 8 months of the year-long process of writing a book doing nothing but outlining it, structuring it, full-time job. I do the research at the same time, but that's all the preliminary work. And I have very highly integrated plots and subplots that all come together. At the end of the book, every single plot and every single character are explained away. There are no open ends unless I intend.
Unless you're setting up the sequel.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. trying to come up with an idea for a new story isn't going to work unless you've got characters that are living, breathing characters. And that applies to the bad guy, too. Now, Billy Haven, we know, is a really evil, despicable character. He fails sometimes in the story because Lincoln prevents a crime, but we feel that Billy Haven has suffered a loss, and I want readers to feel that way. Because then when Lincoln defeats him, if he does, not giving anything away, if he defeats him, we feel Lincoln has an accomplishment as opposed to, taking down a straw man.
Right, right. You want this the villains to have some kind of dimension, three dimensions, so that we care a little bit about them. So that when they fail to kill a victim, we might just say, "Aw."
Yeah, exactly. You feel something in your heart. Well, we feel for them. We feel for that.
We understand that
thought.
It was something. And at least what drove them. And that's an important thing. So you talked about this structure. I mean, do you create this trellis with holes in it? Plot point here, unexplained clue here.
The world of authors is divided into two groups. One, those who outline, and those who don't. When I teach my seminars in writing, I say, first off, there are two caveats. One, I'm speaking only of commercial fiction, popular commercial fiction, not literature, not poetry. That's the first caveat. The second is, everything I'm about to tell you now in this day-long seminar that you've paid for could be completely wrong, because there's nothing more subjective than writing fiction. This works for me, and what this is starting with a very simple concept, fellow influenced by the bone collector, tattoos messages on victims, period. That was the beginning of the Skin Collector. I didn't know where it was going to go. But over the course of a week, that became a 10-page outline, then a 20-page outline. Over the 6-8 months, the ultimate outline for The Skin Collector was about 140 pages long, and I knew where every single plot twist was going to be. I knew where every clue was going to be seeded into the story, where that clue paid off. I knew where the victims would leave the book horizontally or maybe vertically if they were saved. And so, but without that structure, The story meanders, and it can be very interesting, but these books are not supposed to be interesting. They're supposed to be compelling. Mm. They're supposed to be gripping. And only through that, you know, for me, a very elaborate form of outlining, when I do the work so that the readers don't have to, they can follow it pretty carefully. But I have to say very, very quickly, too, because I'm rather passionate about, you know, creating good stories. Sometimes you get halfway through the outline and you realize this is not a book that should be written. And I guess I challenge your listeners. Have you ever read a book that should not have been written just because you have an idea and a word processor?
How many have you had to throw away?
I have probably thrown out I've written 35 novels, about 60, 80 short stories. I have easily completely thrown out 20 novels.
That, does it hurt?
No, because I've been outlining it. See, I've got 40 pages of outline. I crumple it up and throw it away. Had I been writing from day one, in 3 months, I could produce probably 300 or 400 pages of prose and serviceable prose, maybe some, you know, brilliant passages there. But then I'd get to what would be the middle of the book, and then that ghost of writer's block raises its head. There's no such thing as writer's block. There's idea block. Mm. And that's what destroys a good book.
Not only do you write books, but you also write lyrics to popular songs, lyrics like this.
When life is too much, just remember. When you're down on your luck, just remember. I'm as close as a shadow wherever you go. As bad as things get, you've got to know that I'm with you.
Now, that could sound kind of sweet, knowing that I'm with you close as a shadow, unless, of course, you're talking about a stalker, which you were.
That was a song from an album I wrote about 2 years ago for my book, XO. XO is in Hugs and Kisses. A young country western singer a la Taylor Swift is the subject of a stalker who has taken to heart that song. And the song, listened to one way, could be kind of an affirmation of love between husband and wife, parents and children. But when you put a little edge to it, as this fellow did in his mind, I'm as close as a shadow. I get right up behind you. It takes on a very ominous tone. It was inspired. In fact, the whole book came about because of the song from The Police, Every Breath You Take, which could be interpreted in one of two different ways. And I like that interplay. But I, because you mentioned the album and we played that little snippet, in this day and age, books are challenged. We're up against all sorts of formidable cultural forces like Honey Boo Boo and Candy Crush and things like that, video games, Grand Theft Auto, and not to mention some really wonderful work being done on television and in the cinema. So we have to expand our efforts outside the printed page a bit. So in my book, Roadside Crosses, I created a fictional blog where readers can get more information about the story. I did in the Kill Room, I do some cooking, and I created about a dozen recipes that my hitman chef uses in the book, just as sort of to add color to the book. There's not part of the murder mystery. So I included that. My book, The October List, has original photographs to it. So I think we need to expand beyond and get readers, let readers know that it's not only the printed book, there's other stuff going on too.
Well, I want you to continue to manipulate us long into the future with great books like this. Thanks so much for being with us,
Jeff. Oh, thank you, Fred.
Jeffrey Deaver, the author of The Skin Collector. He's reading tonight, 7 o'clock, Flyleaf Books at Chapel Hill. He's going to be at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh tomorrow night, and you can see all of that information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the decline of post offices in the rural American South. Stay tuned.